Welcome to Milk Crate Confessions, a special edition of the Paddler's Playbook, a kayak fishing experience, brought to you by Austin Canoe and Kayak. On this episode, the guys cover summertime redfish patterns, how to keep your fish alive, and kayaks for the big boys. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the paddle.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Podcast Land. I'm your host, Drew Turner. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Lewis, and this is another edition of the Paddler's Playbook. Guys, I've got to admit to you, I am tired. I am a tired man. The weather has actually cooperated for a few days. I took some days off work. I got out there. I did some fishing. I know, Chris, you did a few days of fishing over this holiday weekend. How you feeling today? You feeling good? You feeling a little sore? How's your arms doing from pulling that skiff around so much?
Well, sir, you know, once you get the hang of it, you realize you don't actually use your arms so much to pull. But we did get out Thursday, Friday, took Saturday and Sunday to exercise our Second Amendment rights and focus on our shooting. But we did get out, and we finally are starting to touch on some success with the skiff. And maybe some of our listeners know that I'm sort of trying to bridge this gap between kayaking and boat worlds. And it has not been easy. It's been difficult. Of course, touch on that subject at a later date, but just so people know, my success now is coming more from trying to apply the kayak world to the skiff rather than trying to apply the boat world to the skiff. When I first started fishing with the skiff, it was all about fishing like I was in a big boat, going from spot to spot to spot to spot, and it just was not working out. And now it's what I'm doing is I'm concentrating on about 10% of the water, 10% of the area, and treating it as if I was in the kayak. And man, we've had some 2 weekends in a row where we've had some really great success out in Galveston West Bay. But you've I saw that you posted up, Mr. Turner of Turner Rod Co. That's it was some pretty impressive redfish. That seems as though Jess, of course, she whoop your ass again fishing, or what happened?
Look, I took a newbie. I'm gonna call him a newbie. He's a newer kayak fisherman. You know, I took him out. We went out last Thursday. I took off work Thursday, and he kicked my butt fishing. And then me and Jessica went out, and she kicked my butt. She caught most of the fish. You know, I caught a few little dinks and a few little rat reds, and she was bringing in the studs, but it felt okay. You know, I got out, I did some fishing. It was nice to put some people on some fish. You know, I kind of stayed back a few times, let them get the cast in when we saw bait hitting and we saw different things. But for Jessica's, I can't take credit for hers. I just picked the place that we're going. And she's to the point now where she just paddles off and she does her own thing. She does her own thing. She only comes and finds me because I carry the cooler whenever she needs some Gatorade or she wants her sandwich. That's about all she needs me for.
I was about to say, because, you know, it's typically for our listeners, it's typically our excuse whenever we don't fish as well as the others around us. Our excuse is that we were focused on them. And
exactly. That they had a good time.
Out, yeah. When I take my kids out, or if I take my my family out, you know, it's always the same thing. Yeah, I didn't catch many fish because, of course, I was concentrating on them catching fish. But when Jessica's fishing with you, yeah, I'm going to say there is no excuse, buddy. She straight up just whooped you.
She did. I mean, there's no more like, hey, why don't you go over here and fish this spot and you do this and that. It's like, all right, we're in the water. I'll call you if I need you. It's that type of thing now. And she put a whooping on some stud redfish. But towards the end of the day, it got a little frustrating, man. The tide went out, and we saw belly crawlers everywhere. But, I mean, the tide was going so hard that they were just struggling not to get stuck in the moving water and on the flats. That they didn't want anything to do with anything we were throwing at them, and we threw everything we had in the tackle box at them. They didn't want it, none of it.
So this is cool that you bring this up, because this actually segues us into our first topic that we're going to talk about, which is summertime red fishing, right?
Yeah.
And some tactics that we use for summertime redfish. And you're talking about the tide was going out. Okay. So our seasoned listeners will be able to, you know, they'll know right off the bat, you probably didn't even get on the water till 10 a.m.
Exactly. This is very true. And guys, if you haven't figured it out already, we don't have a guest for this one. This is a Milk Crate Confessions. I'm sure you heard it in the intro, but just in case you weren't paying attention, this is going to be a Milk Crate Confessions episode. We're going through questions from Facebook. We're going through questions from Instagram. And, you know, we're just going to go through some stuff today. But, Chris, you are exactly right. But this was planned, okay? Like I said.
So you guys wanted to fish the outgoing tide.
We wanted to fish the outgoing tide, and we wanted to fish in the evening because it was 4th of July. And we thought that there would be less people on the water if we launched at, say, 12, 1 o'clock, and then we fished till dark. So we figured that would be the easier thing to do. And, you know, again, I wanted to launch at 12, 1 o'clock. We didn't end up launching until about 2:30. But we were still a little late on that. But yeah, we wanted to hit the falling tide, and the tide started to turn about 2 o'clock right when we launched, and okay. And that's what we wanted to hit that.
So here's the thing, guys, is we're finally starting to see some summer patterns. Up until about a month ago, we still had strong north winds that were blowing in to the Galveston area, which would really help our summer patterns. And so we didn't even see like a nice transition from winter to spring to summer. It was kind of like, okay, boom, here come the southern winds. And all of a sudden now we've got really strong southern winds. It's hot outside. Our tides are really high. We've got high water pretty much everywhere. Right now's the time to find redfish as far back in the marsh as you possibly can go. Some of us, we say, going back into the cow trails, okay, back into the areas where cattle used to run through the marsh system. Because remember, guys, a marsh is a tidal flow area where water, you know, it doesn't necessarily always hold in that area. So there could be areas where cattle are grazing or moving from area to area. So we call some of those areas cow trails. And those are the very far reaches of these marshes. And that's exactly what I did over the past two trips, was I focused on getting into those areas that aren't normally exposed to water, and looking for feeding redfish, and they were there. They were always there. But I'm fishing in the morning, okay? I'm fishing the high tide. I'm trying to learn more about fishing on the high tide, because we've had these crazy high tides lately early in the morning, and I love to fish in the morning. Drew, I'm the opposite. I want to get up at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I want to get on the water before the sun comes up. I don't get that outgoing tide. And I tell you what, I miss fishing that outgoing tide. I miss seeing what you're talking about. The belly crawlers, the fish that are trying not to get stuck and not get swept away, you know, but they're sitting there ambushing bait. They're waiting on their meal to be flushed through. I miss that. So what tips and tricks do you have for these guys on those awesome outgoing tides, man?
Well, in our springtime redfish episode, you know, Ben was talking about you need to find those interconnecting channels between those back lakes, and those are the places that you key in on. Now, in the summertime, you were just talking about when the high tide's in, you want to go and push back as far in as you can to find those fish. Now, on the outgoing tide, if the fish were all the way in the back with the high tide, what are they going to do on the outgoing tide? They're going to follow those fish back through those channels. Now, what I was doing was I was keying in on flats that were adjacent to a marsh drain. So you have the back lake in the back, then you had the marsh drain coming through to, and then there was a big flat area.
Guys, he's that, illustrating that, with his hands. So yes. if you just visualize.
Yeah. So just think of this, guys. You have a launch point and you have a channel that goes through. There's flats on each side. That channel goes back into the marsh. You know, it gets real skinny and then it opens up into a back lake. And you can find a place like this any marsh that you go to. You're going to have a bigger area that's a flat with a channel coming through it. It's going to get real skinny. It's going to make a actual channel small. I mean, with grass on each side, and then it's going to open up to a back lake in the back. So where Chris is talking about on the high tide, he's fishing in the back lakes. Where I'm talking about, I'm fishing the mouth of that channel and then that flat, because those fish are working their way back out of there. And I saw fish everywhere this weekend. And it was one of those that it was very frustrating, because these redfish were keying in on 2 to 3 inch mullet. And there was nothing that I could throw that would make them interested once they were tearing up those schools. Now, when we did catch fish, we were catching them on the flats, but they weren't actively, you know, tearing up, you know, the pops that you were seeing with bait flying everywhere. They weren't actively doing that, but they were, you know, we were throwing into the marsh drain and then pulling it back out, and they were hitting it as it was coming out.
So what was your bait of choice?
Dude, I threw everything that I had. I threw a spinner bait. I threw a topwater. What else did I throw? I threw a small paddle tail. I threw a big paddle tail. I sat there, and I'm not joking you, for at least an hour and watched these fish just hammer schools of bait, just one after another on this flat. And like I said, I threw spinner baits. I threw paddle tails. I threw topwaters at them. And we were in about 8 inches of water. There wasn't much water there. You couldn't throw a popping cork. And I almost think that my topwaters were too big. I wish I would have had a smaller topwater, because all I had was I had a she dog. And I wish I would have had one of the Heaton, the small ones. I can't remember. Are they like Super Spook Junior or something like that? What are the real small ones?
Yeah, the head and Spook Juniors. Yeah,
Spook Juniors, the real little ones, the ones that are about like 3 inches long. I wish I would have had one
instead of a knocker.
Yeah, I wish I would have had one of those. I think that may have been something they would have keyed in on, but I threw everything I had at them, and we couldn't get them when they were actively feeding on those mullet there.
So usually when I see that, I'm looking at like 4 or 5 redfish are eating off of these pods of finger mullet, and not necessarily a group of redfish in the 30s and 40s. If you see a group of redfish that are actively feeding and their numbers are 30s or 40s, I've even seen them as large as 100s, very aggressive, like super, super aggressive, and they'll hit almost anything. Now, of course, I have found pods of 4 and 5 that will hit anything as well. But when it's in a case where there's large groups of one type of bait, whether it's finger mullet or whether it's menhaden shad or, even if they're corralling shrimp, I totally get it, and I totally understand what you're saying. And you want to be able to have as many tactics available to you as possible. You didn't say anything about a crankbait.
Nope. And I was just thinking, as soon as you asked me what I was throwing, I was like, he's going to ask me about a shallow running crankbait.
Yeah.
And why I didn't throw it.
So you got to have one, guys. That's one of those tools in your tool bag that should always be there for you, is a shallow running crankbait. It's just something that really pisses them off. You know, it really grabs their attention. You can reel it in fast and make them chase it, you know, and sometimes you need to have that. Now, other than the crankbait, you can also run a chatterbait. A chatterbait could also serve the same purpose. You don't have to run that bait slowly, you can run it very quickly and make them chase it. Sometimes the spinner does the same thing for you, but spinner is just going to give off a little bit of vibration and not necessarily a lot of racket. And it's mainly designed to give off flash, right? Rather than vibration or noise. They can find it by way of vibration, but man, those crankbaits and chatterbaits are going to be the ones that really piss them off so that they turn around and hit it. We were throwing ripple shad. Of course, for the past couple weekends, it's just been one person on the deck on the casting platform and me poling. So, and what we've been doing is poling through these marsh areas where there are a lot of pinch and small channels in between grass islands. And that's where guys, if you ever see a group of small grass islands in a marsh area, carefully pound the crud out of every angle of those little marsh islands, and you're probably going to pick up one redfish. If you just cruise right past it in your kayak, watch it. You're going to blow one out. You're going to blow one out. It's going to pop out of that little grassy patch, and you're going to be like, oh crap, why didn't I throw over there before I blew that guy out of there? Take your time and concentrate on just attacking those small little pockets and points and pinch points that are created by those small little grass islands. And I guarantee you, you'll start to see some success when it comes to blind casting. Yeah. Which I don't necessarily care for blind casting, but we've had to over the past couple weekends.
Yeah, with the wind kicked up, you've kind of had to, because the water's been a little muddy. And it's funny that you say that. On the way back to where I really wanted to fish this flat that I'm talking about that has the back lake in the back, we fished every pinch point on that channel. So the water was low enough because the tide was coming out that we kind of had to stay in the channel. But we sat there and we fished every pinch point that was back there, and we picked up a fish at every pinch point all the way back to the bigger flat that I wanted to go to.
Yeah, you can't forget about those. Just because you don't see them doesn't mean they're not there.
Exactly. And this time of year with the winds, well, I don't know, man. This year has been horrible with the wind. I don't know if it's just because I want to fish a lot more now because, you know, I'm making the rods. We're doing this podcast. I want to have stuff to talk about. I don't know if it's just my excitement of wanting to get out there more, or it's just the wind has just sucked that much this year.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you exactly what it is, Drew, but you're not going to agree with me. But you're probably dealing with thermal convection.
El Nino.
It's thermal convection, and it's because you fish so late in the day.
That's true.
It's gonna happen, right? The surface of the earth starts to heat up as the sun rises, and it causes turbulence, and it causes air to start circulating. So the wind, that's why you look at your winds in the morning and they're laid down, right? You know, usually it's like, you know, 5-6 miles an hour early in the morning. But then once the sun comes up, then you start dealing with 15s and 16s. It's just, especially offshore. Offshore can be so flat early in the morning. And then once the afternoon starts to heat up, then you start getting these rollers out there, right? And things start to get a little bit rocky.
But it's been more windy this year to you? Like, it's been 15 to 16 miles an hour steady, and it's July now. But we should have had a few calm weeks at least, you know, where we get 4 to 5 miles an hour all week.
No doubt. We've had 12 to 15 mile an hour winds, probably more consistent than we have had, sub 10 mile an hour.
Yeah.
You know, our sub 10 days have been very far and few between.
I haven't even had to bust out the mosquito spray this year. That's how damn windy it's been. I haven't even had to spray mosquito spray on because the wind has kept the mosquitoes down. I mean, that's one thing that's been a plus is I don't have to, you know, smell like off all day. But
when you got coon ass blood like me, the mosquitoes don't bother you.
Dude, they eat me up. Like I have the worst. I got to put on all kinds of sprays and lotions and everything else. I'm getting sunburned and bit by mosquitoes. And
that's because you're a big boy.
I'm a pasty big boy that mosquitoes love.
Speaking of big delicious. Boys, guess what? That's our second topic.
Big boy yaks. We're going to talk about big boy yaks. I see this on TKF and Dirty South and even the Louisiana groups and Florida groups. It is a common thing on all message boards and all Facebook groups. At least once a week, you'll hear somebody ask for recommendations for big boy yaks. Chris, what do you think the big boy needs to have out there? And then from a big boy experience, I'll give you what I think the big boy needs.
So, you know, when I very first started kayaking, there were no big boy kayaks. Sorry, guys, but there were
Hobie PA. That was it.
Yeah, Hobie PA was probably the only big boy kayak. I'm going to say the very first thing that a big boy needs is primary stability. Okay, a big boy yak has to have excellent primary stability, or else as soon as you get into that kayak, you're going to feel unstable and you're not going to like the experience. It's going to be bad for you. Second, I think you guys have to have a good seat. Big boys got to have a robust seat that not only feels like it's industrial, you know, like it's got industrial strength to it, but has some comfort and cushion to it as well. Because let's face it, you can rely on as much ass meat as you've got all day long, but it's not going to be comfortable unless you have some reliable cushioning in the seat, right? Myself, I can sit on the plastics. I can sit on the plastic of a kayak all day long, but I'm not 250. I'm not 300 pounds. Okay. I'm not a huge dude. I'm like right there at 200. And that's on at my heaviest. I'm usually anywhere from like 170 to 200. Yeah, I know my weight fluctuates that much. 30 pounds is ridiculous, but it does. Third.
I'm going to say anything 240 or above is a big boy. That's okay. My threshold. 240. Yeah.
240 and above.
Yeah, 240 and above.
So we've seen guys up to 320 pounds or higher and, you know, requesting information about kayaks. And I think primary stability is number one. Now, guys, you have a primary and a secondary, okay? I don't think you're going to be too concerned about secondary stability. Big boys don't typically like to stand up in their kayaks. But primary stability, of course, is going to be number one. Number two is a seat. Number three, I think it's going to be deck, okay, an open concept on the deck. Because if you guys feel cramped in your environment, just like everybody else, if we feel cramped in our environment, it's going to lessen the quality of our experience. So find a kayak that has A, good stability, B, a comfortable seat, and C, an open deck.
I'll agree with all those things. And to piggyback off of what you're saying with the seat, make sure you find a lawn chair seat. I know that's something that you probably meant when you were talking about comfort and durability and stuff. If I can fish out of Jessica's Tarpon 140, is it the most comfortable thing for me? Not really.
I can't imagine your hips fit inside that thing.
They do, barely. I mean, they're in it. And like I had the reload too. I can fit in the reload. And for you guys that don't know or never met me, I'm 5'8", 240. So that's where I'm at. I'm short and stubby. I can fit in those.
I don't usually consider Drew, like, you know, he considers himself a big boy, but he's saying 240 is the top, is the starting point for the big boys.
Yeah, because so I want to be a big boy.
Because he wants to be a big boy. I said 250, and he's like, no, it's 240.
240.
So, I mean, okay, so give us an idea. What's your waist size? Okay, let's get personal here.
36.
36 is not that bad, Drew.
I'm top heavy, man. I'm top heavy.
Okay, I was at 220 and my waist size was 36, and now I'm wearing 32s.
I'm a 36, but I wear a 2XL shirt.
And I've never had a problem sitting inside of any kayak, but I can imagine a Tarpon 140. Dude, primary stability on Tarpon 140 is not good.
It's wobbly.
It's wobbly. Sure. Secondary stability on it's great. I mean, you can push that sucker over to the side as far as you want. It's not gonna turtle on you.
But yeah, the Tarpon 140, it's a little bit wobbly on the primary stability. I will tell you this though, out of the sleek kayaks, whenever I had my Reload, I never really felt tippy in that thing. The primary stability in the Reload was pretty good for, you know, somebody that's a little bit on the heavier side. Out of all the skinny kayaks that I paddled, like the Revo that I had felt tippy, the Tarpon 160, obviously that was the Tarpon 160i. That one was tippy. The 140, it's a little tippy when I'm in it. Like, I've never flipped them, but they still felt tippy. But the Reload, I never felt really tippy in that. It had good primary stability. I never felt it.
The 160i is a magic kayak, man. That thing is, I mean,
it flies.
Yeah, you got to be a special person to appreciate a kayak like that too. But the Reload, I've stood up in a Reload, no problem, and paddled that thing around.
So let's get back to big boy kayaks here. We got a little bit off topic. I think your seat thing is very good. The primary stability. And I'm going to go a little bit further on deck layout. You want to have a little bit of storage available in front of you. Because some of us big boys, you know, we have a big belly. We don't have the greatest dexterity either. It's a little difficult sometimes to turn around in the kayak, dig through your black pack, dig through your crate for something. I mean, you may not be able to get around as much because you have to keep your center of gravity in the middle of the kayak. You don't have as much twist. Your arms can't get back as far. Have a lot of storage in front of you. So, you know, having something with pockets on each side, having something where you can reach under the seat to grab something is a real plus for me. To get into some specific kayaks, I've paddled the Bonafide SS-127. That's a great big boy kayak. It has the junk drawer.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the best big boy kayaks out there.
Oh, in the seat. I mean, even me and you have talked about this before, like not on the podcast, but for our money, and Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, we both think that the seat on the Bonafides is the best seat out there on the market.
So Bonafide took something that was already great. Okay. They took the structural integrity. They took the design. I can't say they took that, but they took ideas from the native seat and made it better. Okay. And that's the way true entrepreneurship and innovation works, is you find something that's great and then you make it even better. So Native used to corner the market with one of the best seats out there. Now I believe wholeheartedly that Bonafide nailed it with their seat. And that is one of the most versatile and comfortable big boy seats out there. And the kayak itself, it has to have been made with big dudes. It's like it was made for all the Chad Hoovers of the world. Okay. It's like it was made. That kayak was made because, I mean, with the catamaran hull, you're going to be able to be efficient and effective. And with that wide stance, you're going to be very stable in both primary and secondary stability. With that huge seat and nothing to impede you from turning to the side, either right or left, you can actually get around to gear that's in the back if you need to.
It has the junk drawer underneath as well.
The junk drawer underneath. Whenever you said junk drawer underneath, mm-hmm. I like instantly went Bonafide. Because they probably have the best storage system underneath the seat. And guys, I don't even own one. I'm not on their staff. I don't have any affiliation with Luther whatsoever. His products are great though. I mean, I use all sorts of Yak Attack products, and one day I will own a Bonafide kayak. The damn hatches too. Even, I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, and I think if you're starting to look for kayaks, the Bonafide is a good place to start. The Native, the Slayer, the new Slayer Max is pretty awesome if you're looking for a pedal drive and you're a big boy. Those seats are big. Looking for a paddle, the Ultimate FX, that's what I paddle. I'm biased with that. Telling you guys right now. That's what I paddle whenever I paddle is the Native FX. And I have the tandem version that I paddle in solo. It's 15 foot. It's got the wide chair. It has storage underneath the seat. I can stand in it. I can pole around. I can reach everything. It's fairly light to load and unload by yourself. That's the big boy kayak that I like the most. But that's just me for the way that I like to fish.
Is the Native... what do they call that hull? Is it dihydra? A dihydra hull? So it's actually almost like two pontoons with a channel down the middle.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what they call it, but that's what it is. It's got the channel down the middle with the two, and it really sticks to the water, if that makes sense. It you can get very shallow with it. And you're sitting a little lower in the water, which sounds like it shouldn't be. But whenever you're paddling, since you're sitting a little lower in the water, it's a little more stable than, you know, really riding on top. But it is very stable. And it's one of my favorite kayaks that I've owned. Obviously, I've had it like 4 years, which is an eternity if you know me and kayaks.
So if you're going to, Drew, if you're going to talk, throw out there three kayaks for non-pedal driven kayaks, you're going to first choose Bonafide, Native Ultimate, and what other one? A Slayer?
The Slayer is good. And you know what? I'm going to throw this out there because I don't think we talk enough about some of the lower price point kayaks. I've been seeing a lot of great things about the Perception Outlaw. And it's a new kayak from Perception. They have them. I believe they had them at Academy. I'm not 100% positive. But it's got the bigger chair. It's got the open deck in the front. It's got some underneath storage. It's a big boy kayak. And it's in the price point. I want to say it's $600 to $750, depending on where
that's
you find
price.
It and where it's on sale. But I would... You know, I would ask people to go check that out because, I mean, not everybody can afford to get a Native FX and you're looking at, you know, $1,500 to $1,700 or, you know, the SS 127. What's the price on the SS 127? Let me look.
Man, I don't know, but I'm looking at this Outlaw and this sucker. Yeah. All right. I'm digging it, man. It's got really nice foot pads for a standing area. I like the fact that it doesn't have a front hatch. I'm digging the fact that the front hatches are going away because honestly, guys, we never store anything in them. And they're hard to get to if we do ever put anything inside of them. You usually have to have a buddy to help you. It's basically a 12-foot kayak. They categorize it as 11.5. It does have the big boy seat. It's got a very wide stern.
I think it says that you stability. Yeah, and I think it says that you can fit a 35 quart cooler on the back of that thing.
And these are available at ACK, man. These are available at ACK. The price point's right around right under $800. It's like $729.
I haven't been able to get in one, but from looking online and you know, hearing some of the reviews on it, For a lower price point kayak, that seems to be something that a lot of guys are picking. And they're doing a little something different. If you look at the rod holders, in the back. There's four of them, and they're two right beside each other. And they go straight, I mean, not straight back. They're at a, what do you think that is? A 35, 45 degree angle shooting straight back.
So this is great. Standard. This is fantastic. Yeah. You know why? Because it helps to keep your rods out of the way
whenever you're casting.
Whenever you're casting, and also when you're going underneath low overhanging brush or bridges, that's a perfect position for them. I can't stand the ones that point out to the sides. This though is killer. I'm looking at this photograph, And guys, you can take the seat, disengage the seat, and use your Yeti cooler in place of the seat, and stand on top of that Yeti cooler as you're paddling the sucker around. That's pretty innovative, man.
I'm gonna have to get out. I'm gonna have to get out and try one of those. You know, if any of the listeners around the Houston area have one, I would love to paddle it around just to see about it. You know, see if it's everything that everyone's talking about online. I don't know how I got into a Perception Outlaw owners group, because I do not own one, and I don't remember.
But you got added to one.
Yeah, I don't remember signing up for it. But it's been pretty cool to see everything. Now, Chris, you just asked me about some paddle kayaks. What about some pedal kayaks for the big boys?
So pedal kayaks, man, we're getting into the larger price points, of course. Some of the least expensive pedal drive kayaks are going to be around $1,700, $1,800. I think at the lowest end, probably the best pedal-driven kayak is going to be the Topwater PDL.
Yep.
Now, it's not the biggest big boy kayak, okay? So that's going to be good for like your 240s. It's going to be good for you, Drew. And if you're getting up there in weight, if you're more of like a 300-pound guy, I'm sorry, fellas, but y'all are going to have to put some money down on either a Titan or the PA. If you want the bicycle type pedal drive, then Titan is your answer. If you want more of a stepper system, like the Mirage Drive, then the PA is your answer. Now the Outback, the 2019s and up, they did incorporate more of a flat bottom hull in the new Outback, which is going to increase the stability, primary and secondary stability, for larger people. And they increased the width of the seat. So now it's called the Vantage CT, I think, or Vantage CT Plus. I can't remember, but it's about 1 to 2 inches wider than the regular Vantage seat that came in the previous year's Outback. So they did redesign the Outback with larger people in mind. It does have a little bit weight capacity, I believe, but I still don't think that it qualifies for being in the big boy kayak group, man. I think the Titan and the PA are the two kings when it comes to big boy pedal drive kayaks.
Yeah, and some big boy kayaks that, you know, I haven't owned, so I don't speak about them too much because I don't have any personal experience with them. But, you know, just talking to other people and, you know, looking online, the Feel Free Lure, that has a very high weight capacity too. And that's something that we didn't touch on, but if you really are like a big boy, I'm talking about like 350, you know, plus, you need to start looking at the weight capacity of these kayaks. Now, if you are 350 with 50 pounds of gear and the weight capacity on your kayak is 400, are you going to sink it? No, it's not going to sink. It's like kind of like the best buy date on the milk. Is the milk bad the day after it goes bad? Absolutely not. You can still drink it as long as it smells good. But the weight capacity on these
bacteria that's growing inside.
Yeah. Yeah, but the weight capacity on these kayaks is for its maximum performance. Up to that point, it is going to perform at its best. Now, like I said, you're not going to sink it, but I don't know if I want to take the chance of, you know, if the weight capacity is 300 pounds and I'm 250 and I got 50 pounds worth of crap and I'm going to go offshore on it. Like, I'm not going to take that risk. So
it's definitely not recommended to exceed the threshold of the weight capacity. It's not. You know, my skiff has a recommended weight capacity that I guarantee you I won't exceed it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to risk the safety of the souls that are on board and, you know, my investment in that fiberglass. I would suggest that people don't exceed the weight capacity of your plastic boats either. I mean, a PA has a weight capacity of 600 pounds, I believe.
Yeah, it's 500 or 600. And a lot of these bigger ones, like the Titan is 500, I think. Which one was I looking at earlier as well? The Big Water, that's another one that's out there. Or the, yeah, I'm sorry, not the, the Three Waters Big Fish. Yeah, Three Waters Big Fish. Like, I'm combining those two together. That's another big boy kayak. Guys, if you're looking for a big boy kayak, you're probably looking for something that's over 33 inches wide. I would say if you're over 300 pounds, you should look for something 34 inches or bigger, because that's going to give you a higher weight capacity on them. But yeah, I really think you can look at the lures, you can look at the native Titans, you can look at the PAs. There's a whole list. And I mean, I'm sure we're forgetting the big rig from Jackson. That's another, you know, big boy kayak that you can get out on.
We're not forgetting it.
That thing paddles like a barge. I'm sorry, all my Jackson peeps out there. The pedal drive for that may make it easier to get around in, but I paddled that one. I'm not a huge fan. I love the Cuda, but the big rig, man, that was a lot to be moving around. The big tuna was almost less to paddle around than that big rig.
I tell you what, I love, there's some things I love about Jackson, but I don't love their draft or their speed, man. They don't glide. They don't draft well, and they're not very fast. They're hard to move around.
Yeah, but if you love running over oysters and you don't want to worry about the bottom of your boat, and you know, you see some of these guys that are putting keel guards on there, you know, they're putting armor and everything on the bottom because they don't want to scratch them up. If you get you a Jackson, those suckers are thick. They are very thick. They are very
thick.
They are thick, and they will take a beating on the coast. And I mean, because they're designed to be, you know, river boats at heart, and you know, taking over rocks, you know, dragging across everything. They're very well built boats, but they are not the fastest boats. I mean, even with names like a Cuda, you would think it's fast. The Cuda is a fairly stable boat, but it's not the fastest boat out there either.
So hey, I need to take us back to perception right quick, man. Perceptions are often overlooked. They really are in a lot of ways. And right now, folks need to know that ACK, Austin Canoe and Kayak, their summer deals right now, I believe 15% off all Perception and Wildie. Is that right? Perception and Wildie, 15% off?
That's right. Perception and Wildie, 15% off kayaks and accessories. You heard me correct. 15% off kayaks and accessories. That's not very often. Yeah, it's not very often that ACK does percentages off kayaks. You know, we see a lot of accessories and stuff from them. And if you're not at demo days, or you're not at the boat show or the fishing show, it's difficult to get a percentage off of a kayak. But right now, they're doing 15% off Wildie kayaks and accessories at ACK. But they also have some Astral there. What's the discount on the Astral right now, Chris?
25% on all Astral products. So I know you guys have been asking about shoes lately. We've had a lot of questions about shoes. Astral, I promise you, okay? And if you don't like your damn Astral shoes, I'll buy them back from you, okay? Not serious. I won't do that. I don't have that deep of pockets, but I'm that serious about Astral shoes, man. The Loyak are probably the best kayaking shoes that have ever been made. Now, they have other types of kayaking shoes, some that maybe provide a little bit more support in the sole for, you know, walking on rough surfaces. The Loyak are really not made for walking on rough surfaces, maybe some sand and mud, but all Astral products 25% off on ACK's website right now.
Yeah, and we are going to be giving away some Astral footwear coming up here pretty soon. You guys are going to have to check out our Facebook page. We're going to be doing a lot on there. And Chris, that reminds me, you know, I want to talk about something real quick, and I keep forgetting to talk about it. I just want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into the show, for, you know, downloading it, for telling our friends. I know if you guys saw our last Facebook post that we posted up, we picked up another sponsor. We're not going to talk about this sponsor or this partner. They're actually going to join us for an episode very, very soon. I don't want to give it away, so I'm not going to tell you guys what we're talking about. There were some guesses whenever I post it. I'm here to tell you, nobody has guessed it correct yet.
Some of y'all's guesses were downright silly.
Yeah, nobody has guessed it correct yet, but we're very excited to bring on new partners, because guess what, guys? These new partners means more stuff for the you guys, the bro staff, and the listeners. This is going to give us some extra stuff to give away. Not only are we going to have our prizes from ACK every month, now we're going to have some prizes on the Facebook page and Instagram. It's going to allow us to do a lot more from this new sponsor. But one thing I wanted to bring up, whenever we're talking, we wouldn't be able to pick up these new partners if we weren't getting a bigger audience every time that we put out an episode. And guys, our audience is growing and growing and growing. I want to look at the geography just really quick to give you guys a little taste. And I'm just going to go over last month. So let's talk about last month and the downloads. So we were downloaded in 26 different states and 9 different countries, Chris. That's friggin' crazy to me. So if you guys are listening, Australia, other than the United States, was our second biggest country. We want to hear from you guys on the Facebook page. Just hit us up and say, hey, I'm a listener from Australia, because I really want to see, I want to put a face to the little numbers that I see for these international ones. But is it crazy that we're being downloaded in 26 different states right now? What's crazy to me is, what are the other 24 states waiting on? What is New Mexico and Arizona waiting on? We don't have anybody listening in New Mexico and Arizona, man. What is
up with
that?
Their beachfront property.
We don't have anybody in Wyoming or Utah or North Dakota or South Dakota. Hey, I don't know what's going on there, man.
Kansas is our number two.
Yes, Wichita, Kansas is our number two, guys.
And
Dallas
is our number three.
Yeah. Dude, it is awesome that we're seeing Chicago, Kansas City, Boston, Town and Country, Florida, Oakland, Fort Worth, DC, Detroit. You know, guys, we're making our way across, you know, the country, and it's great to see these. We would love to see some more interaction on the Facebook page. Just search the Paddler's Playbook and you're going to find us there. We would love to see interaction. We love to see the guys from the Gulf Coast on there. Our last winner from the Life Jacket Challenge was a guy from Alabama. So it was nice to see Alabama represent there. We're getting more downloads everywhere. We want to see you guys. Get interactive on the Facebook page. You know, ask us questions about maybe your waters, about where you're fishing. Put us on to guests that we can interview. You know, we're having guys hit us up. We have some people who want to talk some catfishing. So, I mean, Chris, are there any redfish in Wichita, Kansas? Or Chicago, Illinois? Or Oakland, California?
There are redfish enthusiasts. Okay, those people out there, I know a few of them, and they love to come down to the Gulf Coast and fish for redfish and trout and flounder. But what they're looking for in our podcast is information about kayaking and traveling and some of the other topics that we touch on. In fact, I'd love to know if you guys would be interested in a Second Amendment topic, you know, talking about how do you achieve, you know, participating in your Second Amendment right the correct way. I know there's a lot of people out there that would love to start to carry when you're out on your kayak. Is it acceptable to carry when you're on your kayak? Is it acceptable to carry when you're fishing? You know, those are questions that people have, and we can do those topics, because guess what? It's not always about redfish, right? And we got a catfish show that's coming up.
Yeah, we can talk catfish. We can talk bass. We can talk crappie. We can talk all kinds of fishing. But what we're going to talk about most is what we hear from you guys that you want to hear. So get on our Facebook page, The Paddler's Playbook. Say, hey, Chris, hey, Drew, this is what we want to hear. If you post something and you get, 50, 60 likes, guess what? We're going to have an episode on that topic. You post something, you get 20 likes. Guess what? We're going to have an episode on that topic. Get on the Facebook page and post. But we appreciate you guys listening from everywhere that you're listening. Chris, you want to get into one more question?
I was going to say, since you put that out there about people putting questions as far as topics go on the Facebook page and then us incorporating them into the show, I think our last topic is actually one of those that we've talked about a couple times. And we're talking about how do you keep your fish alive, right? Whenever you're, whether you're tournament fishing or whether you're, you've got a whole entire day of fishing ahead of you. You don't want those fish to die while you're paddling around. You might get out there and catch a fish first thing, as soon as you launch. And then you've got another 4 hours or 6 hours of kayaking ahead of you. How do you keep that fish alive? Well, there's a lot of tips and tactics to use, and they're not just for the tournament fishermen. We didn't all start out fishing tournaments, and we didn't all start out needing to keep our fish alive for an entire day and then release them later. Drew, I know you're still using old school stringers, right?
Yeah, I'll use old school stringer for a little bit, and this may or may not be a bad thing. Sometimes when we go out, if we catch, maybe one trout or one flounder, I'll put it on a stringer. And then if the day's going on and it's still swimming around and we haven't caught nothing else, I may let it go.
Let it go. Release it.
Yeah. Just I make may sure let it go from there.
Enough to swim off.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure, because sometimes I don't want to fool with one fish, I don't want to fool with one, if it's a 16 inch flounder, maybe I don't want to fool with it, but I haven't been trying to keep a lot of fish alive. The middle boy will eat us out of house and home for fish. He wants fish with every single meal. So if we catch more than one fish, it's probably going to get bled out and it's going to be thrown into the cooler pretty quickly. So I can't talk a lot about keeping them alive. I will say that if you go back and listen to Milk Crate Part 1 or 2 with Rex, when he talks about sticking your thumb right there under the fin and bleeding out a redfish, that works like a charm. I've been using that a lot lately because we
that
like
that has to nothing to do with keeping them alive, Drew.
Well, I'm trying to talk for a little bit because I'm going to let you go on for the rest of the show about keeping them alive, because I'm not really trying to keep them alive too much. And I'll tell you this too, even the last time I went crappie fishing at our little, pond that's pretty private and it's pretty easy to catch crappie, a damn snapping turtle bit through my stringer and damn near cut it in half. No, it was a Everlast stringer. Bit through, because it's got the wire in the middle and then it has the orange coating on the end, and it bit all the way down where it frayed the wire that's going through the middle and ate a crappie in half. So
I've got a comment about your one fish deal. Okay. So I had about 6 or 7 fishing trips during a summer where I had only caught one fish and I had let him go. Okay. And every time I'd come home, my wife would say, "Did you bring some fish home?" I said, "Nah, I just caught one, so I let it go." By about the third trip, she said, "Hey, you could have had 3 fish in the freezer by now. Okay. You stop letting those fish go and you make sure you bring them home." So I did for a little while. I was like, okay, well, the rest of the time that if I had just one fish, I'd bring it home. But yeah, no more. I don't do that anymore. So keeping the fish alive. Okay. You talked about the Foreverlast stringer. That is probably one of the best budget stringers on the market. They're inexpensive. You can find them at all the academies. You can find them at Bucky's. You can find them online. We're not sponsored by Foreverlast at all. I'm not sponsored by Foreverlast, But that stringer, the G2 stringer, is super slick, okay, which is fantastic for running. Whenever you're running that stringer through a fish, you do not want to have that stringer get caught up on them, and you want the fish to be able to move up and down on that stringer as they feel needed or as they need to. So the stringer's slick. It's easy to tie a knot into that stringer, okay, which is important, guys. Why? Because you've got to find ways to affix your stringer to your kayak or to yourself in such a way that you can undo it and then do it again very easily, very quickly. The ones that have wires that run through the stringer are not easy to tie knots. They don't like knots very well, and you usually have to come up with some other type of device or a pad eye system where you can run the stringer through a couple different pad eyes to keep it locked into your kayak. Now, keeping them alive on the stringer is very important, folks. Okay, you've got to put the stringer through both lips. You cannot put it through a single lip, and you cannot run the stringer through the gills of the fish. They will die if the stringer is run through the gills and or through only one lip. You have to run the stringer through both lips. Now, why do you have to run the stringer through both lips? That's so you can keep their mouth closed while you're moving from place to place, and they do not drown. Yes, fish can drown, okay? If you're constantly moving water past their gills, you're forcing water past their gills, they will drown. They need to be able to move their gills so that they can breathe, but you do not need to force water past their gills constantly. So keeping their mouth shut by going through both lips is going to help keep them alive. And thirdly, you need to be able to keep them below the float. Okay, and I would say they need to be 4 to 6 inches below the float. Okay, and how do you do that? You tie a knot. You tie a knot into that G2 stringer, and it's got to be a pretty big knot, so you might have to tie it twice, about 4 to 6 inches below the float, and that will keep your fish below the water surface and allow them to get down a little bit deeper so that they're not in that hot stuff all the time. There's another stringer manufacturer out there that saw a need to fix that particular problem, okay? The problem with dying fish that are dying on a stringer. And that company is called Fishhide, okay? Now, there's another company out there, too, that has made one similar, but the Fishhide stringer, I believe, in my opinion, is a much better stringer than any of the other ones out there. And this stringer, what it does is it incorporates a float and then the stringer after the float to attach your fish to, okay? It's a torpedo float, so it doesn't cause any drag. It doesn't cause any resistance. So while you're pulling it, it's much easier to pull your fish. But each fish has its very own tether to the stringer. And that fish is allowed to swim independently of the stringer and of the other fish. Now, what happens whenever you stack fish onto a stringer, like the regular G2, they're no longer allowed to swim independently, right? They're all kind of just stuck there together with each other. Yep. The fish hide stringer allows each fish to swim independently. And because there's 6 to 8 inches of independent stringer leader after the float, those fish can swim down and stay close to the bottom where they're more comfortable, at less stress. And sometimes I've seen people pulling these stringers through the water and you can't even see the fish, man, because the fish are swimming below the float. It's a really great stringer. Besides stringers, you do have the option of carrying a small live well with you. The problem with that is you're going to have to find a container that is 28 inches in width. If you're planning on keeping a 28-inch redfish, you're not going to be able to cram it into a 26-inch container and expect that thing to strive. You know, it's not going to live inside there all day long. So you'd have to find something at least 28 inches, maybe even larger, so that it can freely float there and receive oxygen.
And guys are using circulating pumps and some of those bigger coolers. And I think what he's talking about too, as far as tournaments, is transporting it to the tournament. If you have a long drive, I'm seeing guys with, you know, these huge coolers and they're putting fish in there with circulating pumps, correct?
Yeah, I use a 44 liter is what I use, because that I can transport up to three 28 inch fish in a 44 liter cooler. And I did not buy a expensive Yeti cooler to do this. You buy the cheapest, least expensive Igloo Marine, you know, probably like $50. And then I use a bubbler and a circulator. Mm-hmm. And I have had fish come out of that live well more feisty than fish that are on an aerator, than on an oxygen tank. An oxygen tank will literally, it's like putting them on crack. And you can't get them to stop moving. You get them out of the water and they're just thrashing all over the place. When I use a bubbler and a recirculator, for some reason, it does the same thing. It puts tons of oxygen into the water, and they're very feisty as soon as you get them out. That full system, let's say you pay $50 for the cooler, you're going to pay $30 for the recirculator, and you're probably going to pay $20 for a bubbler. And then don't use the stone that comes with that bubbler, because that stone is like the size of a quarter.
And use the round one.
It's not going to do crap for you. Get the round one, or go to Walmart and buy. They've got one that's like 8 inches long, and it's just a long straight one. And it's like $1.49, and you can use that one. And what I do is I use Velcro so I can take it on, you know, take it out whenever I clean that cooler. But Velcro it to the bottom of your cooler, plug in your bubbler. Those circulators, they usually take up, the bubbler takes up nothing as far as amperage is concerned. The circulator takes up almost 2 amps, amp hours. So if you're running a battery that's, geez, man, what are our normal 12 volt deer feeder batteries? Like 10 amp hours?
Yeah, 8 or 10.
So
or 8 to 12.
Okay, so let's meet in the middle. Let's say 10 amp hour battery, and you're running both the bubbler and the circulator, you're barely going to get 5 hours. In fact, whenever I tested mine, I only got right at 4 hours. So you've got to make sure that you've got a fully charged battery, and that you've got enough time to get from your launch point to weigh in. I usually don't travel any more than 3 hours. So I'm usually pretty good. But then you've got to keep the fish alive while you're waiting to get weighed in.
That was going to be my next question. How long do you feel comfortable having that fish in that setup in a cooler without changing out the water or anything like that?
Brother, as long as that aerator is going all day long. I'm not even kidding you. They will last all day long inside that cooler. Keep the temperature low. Okay. Maybe throw I've got a small 1 liter 7-Up bottle that I freeze so that I can throw it inside
the cooler. That was going to be my next question. Are you putting some ice, some water bottles or anything in there?
Do not use ice. Okay. In fact, you know what a lot of tournament anglers do is whenever they pre-fish, they will grab some of the water in the area that they're fishing, and they will freeze that. And that way they can throw the whole block inside there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's some serious stuff right there.
But they do it. Now, myself, because chlorinated water is very dangerous to fish.
Yeah, right? It's to the fish. Yeah.
But as long as your bottle, I mean, if you have a 7-Up bottle and you're sure it doesn't leak, it doesn't have to be 7-Up. It could be Coke Zero.
It could be whatever kind of bottle you can find that doesn't have a bunch of chemicals and everything on it. Clean it off good. Take
a 1-liter bottle. Off. A a 1 liter bottle for sure is perfect. 2 liter bottle is too big. 1 liter bottle will at least keep, you know, it'll cool that water down. And as long as you don't open up the lid, it'll keep the water temperature low.
Yeah, and I've seen it too. I don't even know if some of the newer cars and trucks have the cigarette lighters, but some of those circulating pumps and stuff, you can find them that will plug into a cigarette lighter and you can run it through your truck or through your car or SUV into a cigarette lighter and run it there so you don't have to run any batteries. But I know my truck, I don't even think I have a cigarette lighter in there. I know some of the younger people listening may not even know what we're talking about with the cigarette lighter in the truck.
So all of these systems run off of 12 volts, okay? So you can hook them directly up to a 12-volt deer feeder battery, but your car is also 12 volts. So the way mine's hooked up is I have a plug, a waterproof plug, and I have a female end that is either a cigarette lighter or clamps for my battery. So the male end is always going to be the bubbler or the bubbler and the agitator or the circulator are connected together with the male end of a plug. And then I either have the cigarette lighter adapter or the adapter for my battery, which is another, you know, they just made up. So it depends on if I'm taking my excursion, I can put the cooler inside the back of my excursion. If mm-hmm. I'm taking a different vehicle, then I've got to carry the cooler on the trailer. Well, if I'm going to carry the cooler on the trailer, I have to have an external battery source. So yeah. I have to use the deer feeder battery. Now I have run a cable all the way up to to the inside of my car from the trailer. And that was just scary. I was afraid that it was going to come detached or pop or snap or something like that. And I did that once and I said, nah, I'm not going to do that ever again. I'm going to just have a little battery with me that can run those devices. So there are many different ways to do this, guys. I did talk about the oxygen tanks. The oxygen tanks can get a little pricey. It's not the tank itself that's pricey. You can get a tank for $20-$30. Okay. You can get the oxygen really cheap. Okay. Boyd's in Texas City, they fill the oxygen tanks. Regulators that are expensive. The regulators can cost you $100 or more for a good regulator to go on top of those bottles. You have to have regulators and relief valves to make sure that you're safe when using those compressed oxygen bottles. I don't know of any other systems other than, you know, if you're boat fishing, then you typically have live wells built into your boat. What we use for transporting fish are going to be either the bubbler and circulator combo or an oxygen tank.
Yes, sir. Or you can just put them in the cooler and take them home and fry them up in some grease. That's what I like to do with them, man. You won't catch me at very many tournaments unless I'm just going there to hang out and talk and chill, just because you gotta start fishing way too early. My body doesn't like to function before 6 o'clock, and that ain't no damn lie.
I think I'm taking the rest of this year off from tournaments, to tell you the truth. It has been way too much of a grind, and the state of this world is way too strange for me right now to even put my mind into a competition. It's just not really happening.
Yeah, man, I just want to get out on the water and relax and not have to worry about when I get there or where I have to be. I even told the buddy that I took, he's like, hey, man, I want to go fishing with you. I said, well, do you have any plans on when you got to be home? And he said, well, no, not really. I said, well, it can't be not really. Like, it has to be no. I don't have any plans on when I get home, because I don't know. You know, I can give you a gauge on what time we're going to leave. And Chris, you'd be proud of me. I told him I would be there at 5:30, and I got there at 5:41. So I wasn't too late to our rendezvous where we were meeting. I mean, we were meeting in spring at ACK. So
guys, this fellow's been late almost 2 hours on a fishing trip before.
But I'll let you know if I'm going to be late. Like,
yeah, he did.
I'll wake up about 4 and I'm going to text you and say, guys, I'll meet y'all on the water. Because I'll wake up, but that doesn't mean my body's going to cooperate. I mean, I have to go through my routine, my morning routine, and brush my teeth, use the restroom, make sure everything's out of the system before I get out there, because I don't want to have to find that marsh island. Oh, Lord. That's that. Ooh. I don't know how. I don't ever talk to you that early in the morning, so I don't. I don't know how that breath smells.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. Guys, it's been fantastic talking about all these topics. Keep them coming. I definitely want to have some challenging ones coming up. I know we've got our next guest episode ready to cook. It's in the pressure cooker right now.
It is, guys.
We've got some really good contests coming up, so keep your eyes peeled on the Facebook page.
Yes, sir. We're going to be talking to our new partner next edition. Not only ACK, but we'll have our new partner with us, which means more prizes for the bro staff. But guys, we really enjoyed bringing you this podcast today. Please be interactive on the Facebook page. Let us know what kind of episodes you guys want to hear. Even if you guys like the Milk Crate Confessions type episodes, where we just answer random questions, put it on there. If you guys like or want to hear about a specific thing with a specific guest, let us know on there too. We want to hear from you guys. We want to bring you guys what you want. We want to see our listenership grow. We want you to, you know, tell your friends about us, but we want to bring you what you want to hear. So for Drew and Chris, guys, get on the Facebook page. We really appreciate you guys listening. We'll see you next time.
See ya.